This is Mac Format This Week. 30 minutes of news, reviews, Q&A, and features from the world of the Macintosh, iPod, and iPhone. Coming up on this edition, valuable security advice you can't live without.
If you're not paying attention to security risks as they appear because you think, well, I'm a Mac user and I'm safe, then the rug will be pulled out from under us while we're not watching.
We've got a handful of tips to help you protect your data from prying eyes. Also coming up, a new antivirus detector.
iAntivirus is specifically looking for programs that are identified as threats to OS X. I think it's really addressing a need that a lot of Mac users have at the moment.
Graham Barlow tells you about iAntivirus and how it can help you. All that and more on this edition of Mac Format This Week. With the resources of Mac Format Magazine, this is Mac Format This Week. Hello everyone, I'm Brad Gibson. If you own a Mac laptop, you probably worry most about it being stolen. But the Macintosh platform is fast becoming the target of the sort of crime that we thought mostly affected Windows users. We're talking about data theft. Someone trying to see your important documents on screen, or worse yet, copy your data for criminal use. You might think that you're not very vulnerable, but if you think hard about it, someone would love to know your bank card data, listings in your address book, and much more. So what can you do to keep your data safe? Graham Lee is a senior Macintosh software engineer with Sophos, an antivirus and computer security company based near Oxford. He joins us now to discuss a handful of tips for keeping your data safe, especially on your Mac laptop. Graham, thanks for joining us.
Hi there, Brad. It's great to be here.
Now, Graham, a recent Sophos report that you wrote showed Mac users are still not as vulnerable to security attacks as Windows users, but they still can't afford to be complacent, can they?
The biggest danger in anything is to ignore any risks that are happening. When you're driving, you don't just ignore everybody else on the road. You have to pay attention to what they're doing.
Right.
So it is a concern that if you're not paying attention to security risks as they appear because you think, well, I'm a Mac user and I'm safe, then you know, the rug will be pulled out from under us while we're not watching.
Exactly. Now let's concentrate on security issues related to Mac laptops. Laptops are more prone to security issues, are they not? And why?
It's because you take them around with you, basically. You've got all this data on them, and of course the laptop itself is worth some money, and you're taking it out of, you know, maybe your home or your office where you control who goes in and out of the building, but you also control the network that it's on. That's not true when you take the laptop away with you. So, of course, it's presented different risks and different threats when it's in the outside world.
Now, Graham, let's discuss the ways that Mac laptop owners can better protect their data. First is not carrying important data about yourself on your laptop. But that's really easier said than done, isn't it?
Well, if you think about how cheap external storage is now, it would really be easy for any laptop user, even a user whose only computer is a laptop, use an external device, keep their data at home in that safe, controlled environment, and then only take with them what they need when they're going out on the road.
So it's really important to decide whether all of this information that you have really needs to come with you first, and most important, then take steps on the road to safer computing.
Exactly. If you think about, you know, your camera, you're much likely to have your camera stolen if you take it out with you when you go out on holiday, say, than if you leave it at home.
Right.
But of course, if you leave your camera at home, then you can't take any pictures. So you
exactly
have to make that trade-off.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Okay, now one way to protect your data is to change your keychain passwords so it's tougher to get to your data. What's the problem here and how do you fix this issue?
So the keychain stores internet passwords and other information in an encrypted form on your computer. The problem is that it's automatically synchronized with your login password, and whenever you log into the computer, the keychain is unlocked and the passwords become automatically available. Now, you can change the passwords to stop that being the case.
And how do you change those passwords? How do you do it?
There's an application on your Mac called Keychain Access, which is in the Utilities folder in Applications. And if you start that application, go to the Edit menu, Change Password for Keychain Login. then it gives you a password prompt where you can change the keychain password so it's no longer the same as your login password.
Now, you can also control when the keychain is automatically locked too, right?
That's correct, and it means that whenever you need a secure item, such as a password for a mail account, you have to enter your password again, and after a short amount of time, the keychain will return to the locked state, so there's less of a window for attackers to use those keychain items.
Now, your white paper talks about prying eyes in, say, a coffee house when you step away from your laptop, for instance. Now, it sounds very innocuous in terms of the scenario, but it does happen, and you suggest locking the screen when you're away from your Mac. Tell us about that.
So hackers don't even need a computer to be able to access your data. If you're in, you know, the public environment, like, as you suggest, the coffee house, then someone who's just reading the screen over your shoulder could be able to get very valuable information if you're making it available.
Right.
Now, in the keychain access application's preferences, there's a show status in menu bar item. This shows a little padlock icon in the menu bar in the top right of the screen, from which you can choose lock screen. And that will enable your password and mean that you have to enter your login password before you can get back to the screen and to your applications.
Now, another issue you address is encrypting your home folder and locking it with a password using File Vault. Explain the importance here of encrypting data and how this works.
What File Vault does is to take your home folder and replace it with an encrypted container which has the same documents, preferences, and so on in it. Your information is no longer available until you've actually provided your login password. And that means that even if an attacker is able to take your hard drive out of your computer and put it in their own computer, they can't get access to any of your files because they're stored inside this encrypted storage.
So how do I turn on File Vault, Graham? I mean, how does it work and what do I do?
So in the System Preferences application, there's a Security Preference pane. And one of the options in there is to turn on File Vault for the account. The first thing it will ask you when you enable this setting is to enter a master password. Now, this is basically a recovery password for in case you forget your original login password. So it's a good idea to make it a very strong password. And although this might sound counterintuitive, to actually write it down and keep it somewhere safe, just in case you do ever forget your password and really need to get your files back. File Vault will then log you out of macOS 10 while it converts your home directory into one of these encrypted storage containers.
Now, using File Vault also brings up another important issue, and that is if you encrypt the data on your Mac, should you also keep backups encrypted as well?
That's a very good question, and really the answer is a matter of choice and of personal taste. For instance, I don't keep my backups encrypted. My backups are kept in plain on an external hard drive. The reason for that is that this hard drive doesn't come with me like the laptop does. It stays, you know, in a safe and secure environment, so I can trust that the data on it won't be accessed in the same way that the data on my laptop will.
So think about really where you're going to have that backup drive and where it's going to be and how secure it is.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, now can you use File Vault to, say, just encrypt a certain number of files into a disk image? And if so, how?
You can't use File Vault itself to do that, but the same technology, the same encrypted disk image files, can be created, and you can use them to store any files. Now, you do this in the disk utility application. Mm-hmm. When you choose to create a new disk image, you can set the encryption level. And one way in which I use this is to create USB sticks, which are encrypted, by generating a disk image which is the same size as the whole USB stick, but is encrypted.
Nice idea. Okay, let's finally talk about securing your trash. I think maybe people think that once you throw anything away, whether it be a piece of email or a document, that it's gone for good and can't be recovered. But that really isn't the case, is it?
No, not at all. Actually, deleting a file from macOS 10 doesn't remove the file, doesn't remove the contents of the file from the disk. It just removes the reference. So all it does is stop the operating system from being able to work out where that file is. It's still on the disk and can easily be recovered.
Okay, so what's the process in making sure your trash is not recoverable?
When you empty the trash, rather than using the usual empty trash mechanism, go to the Finder menu and choose Secure Empty Trash. This actually writes over the area of the disk where the file is stored a few times with different values, noughts, ones, random data. And so it means that the file can no longer be read from the disk.
But now people should know that this deleting file process can be a little bit slow, right?
Absolutely. It takes a lot longer, but that's because it's having to write to the disk all these times.
Graham, some people might think taking all these security precautions is overkill, but it's really no different than watching over your wallet, which is full of credit cards, ID, cash, stuff like that, right?
Absolutely. So people already know how to take seriously the idea that you don't go around giving your bank statements or credit cards out to people in the street. Now, data that's stored on your computer is just as valuable, and it's just as much a description of who you are and how you work and how you live. So, yes, people do need to take their online data in as serious a fashion and treat it as securely as they do already paper information.
Graham, thanks so much for joining us and going over these great tips to keep your data safe.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Graham Lee is a senior Macintosh software engineer with Sophos, an antivirus and computer security company based near Oxford. A complete four-page guide to keeping your data safe appears on page 51 in the August issue of MacFormat, which is on sale now. As long as we're on the subject of security, let's talk about viruses now. And again, another area where Mac users are thankfully not as vulnerable as our friends in the Windows world, but still open to attack. So it makes sense to protect your Mac in whatever way you can. Now, there are various virus checker programs available that will do the job, and there's a new one out there that has just been released. MacFormat editor Graham Barlow joins us now to tell us about it. And two Grahams in the same show is a little much, but we're going to allow it just this time around. Hello, Graham.
Hi, Brad. How are you doing?
Very good. Tell us about this new product and what it does.
The product's called iAntivirus, and it's made by a company called PC Tools, who've previously only done Windows software. This is their first venture into Mac software, but they've got a big name in security on the Windows platform.
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to bring their expertise to the Mac, and they've decided to do it by releasing this iAntivirus program that scans your Mac for Mac-specific malware, and it's essentially a free program.
Oh, and free. We love free on this show, as you well know. Now, what makes iAntivirus different?
There's currently a lot of, there's quite a few antivirus programs for the Mac that they're mainly used to detect Windows viruses that you might pass on to a Windows user. So they're not always looking for programs that are specifically threats to the Mac, whereas iAntivirus is specifically looking for programs that are identified as threats to OS X.
Yeah, which really is the biggest problem for the Mac user as the virus world grows on the Mac.
Yeah, there's already been a few Trojans found in the wild that are affecting OS X at the moment. It's not a huge problem. There hasn't been a really nasty virus yet for the Mac, but you just kind of know that security's creeping up the agenda and Mac users want to feel more secure.
Yeah, exactly. So what are the basic things that iAntivirus can do?
It's got two main functions, the first of which is it will scan your Mac for anything that it finds it's suspicious. So you install the program and you just click Scan My Mac, and you've got a choice of different scanning options, some of which are more thorough than others.
Mm-hmm.
There's a quick scan option, which is what I'd recommend first, because the thorough option does take ages because it goes through every single file on your Mac or all the archives and everything. That can take a long time, whereas a quick scan will just give it a brief overview and let you know if it's found anything suspicious. The second thing it will do is once it's running, it will have a protecting your Mac icon in your menu bar, and as long as that's on, it's actively looking all the time to make sure that you're not installing anything that's a malware program.
And what happens when iAntivirus finds an infected file?
Well, it finds something that it identifies as being affected. It will quarantine it, essentially, so it will separate it off from the rest of your system so it can't do any damage. You can then investigate what files it's quarantined and delete them if you'd like to.
Now, what if there's an update to the Mac signature file with a new virus or Trojan horse check? I mean, is that automatic, or do I have to manually go back and check?
PC Tools say that it will update within hours once there's a new threat identified, but there's a smart update feature in the program, and you can set it to check weekly, every second day, daily, or never. I mean, I just ticked daily because I thought that was the most sensible option.
Yeah. iAntivirus, this sounds very simple, very cool, and the great thing that we like about it is that it's free.
Yeah, it's you know, there's no complicated setup screens. You just install it, it runs. I think it's really addressing a need that a lot of Mac users have at the moment. The only downside is you need to have Leopard for it to run, and you need to have an Intel Mac. So a lot of the older systems won't be protected by it.
Right. And if you want to upgrade and get customer support, that only costs you £30. So if you don't need that, then this is a great product because it's, like we said, free.
Yeah, great. I mean, we love these free programs, and as long as it stays free, then we're going to keep using it.
Exactly, exactly. All right, Grant, thanks so much for talking to us about iAntivirus. It's really something people should look into.
Yeah, definitely. You can download the program now from www.iantivirus.com.
And we'll also include that as an enhancement on the enhanced podcast link of this show. That's great. Grant, thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Brad. Bye.
Graham Barlow is the editor of MacFormat. His two-page how-to, entitled How to Protect Your Mac from Viruses, appears on page 60 in the August issue. A powerful sticky note tool and a set of feedback utilities, along with two bonus freeware applications, these are the shareware picks for the month of August, and Craig Grinnell joins us to go over them. Hello, Craig.
Hi, Brad.
We've got a bunch to cover. Let's get right into our first one, and it's Sketchbox version 1.4 from OMZ Software. You can get through it through the Enhanced Podcast link. It is free shareware. It's a tool for creating reminders using digital sticky notes, but we already have stickies on Mac OS X, so why add Sketchbox to your applications folder, Craig?
The thing is, it offers so much more than stickies does. You know, Apple's applications, all right, but it's kind of limited. What Sketchbox offers is three-layer stickies. So you have a canvas layer on which you can just draw stuff or grab screen grabs. There's a text layer for overlaying text, which happens to be semi-transparent as well, so the canvas layer shows through a little bit as well. There's an alarm layer for setting timers. And you can also set the stickies to different layers, so to your desktop, like a normal window, or so they're always floating on top of everything else.
The canvas layer sounds interesting. What tools does it have?
Well, it's got a brush with a variable width, so you're not kind of limited to just drawing in a really nasty pencil-type way.
Uh-huh.
There's an eraser tool as well, which enables you to sort of remove strokes you've already made. A whole bunch of color settings. And also, one thing that I really liked, and it showed a real attention to detail on behalf of the authors, it's pressure-aware. So if you've got like a graphics tablet, you can actually have quite fine-tuned drawings rather than just sort of scratchy, nasty, aliased ones.
Yeah, that's a really nice addition, actually. Although you're keen on the stickies themselves, you also rate Sketchbox's management functionality too, right?
Well, that's the thing. If you've got stickies on Mac OS X, you can save bits of the stickies off. You know, you can export the text and that sort of thing. And it's like they kind of completely fly by night. Now, the thing is, in the past, sometimes some post-it notes are a little bit more important than other ones. Some of them you just chuck in the bin, other ones you leave on your monitor for, you know, days, or you want to bring them back later. And it's kind of the same with the digital ones as well. Sometimes I write notes on how to use an application, and I want to bring that note back. I don't want to bin it. You know, I've got notes on regarding sort of web design coding. Again, I want to bring that back. I don't want to delete it. I don't want to export it and then re-import it.
Right.
So Sketchbox automatically deals with that. It stores all of the stickies. So you close a sticky, it's not deleted. It's just gone back to the sort of iPhoto Lite interface that Sketchbox has. And then you can manage them, you can group them, you can search them, and you can reopen them whenever you need them.
You gave this app 4 out of 5. What was your thinking behind that score?
Well, it does its job and it's free. Some aspects of the interface I thought were a little bit quirky and a bit clunky, so it wasn't quite good enough for a Mac Format Choice Award. However, if you're a fan of stickies, you really have to check this out because it's just so much better than Apple's solution.
All right, that's Sketchbox version 1.4, and there's also a great tutorial that Craig wrote about Sketchbox that you'll also find in the August issue. You'll want to check that out, too. All right, let's move on to our next product. It's iStat Menus version 1.3 from iSlayer.com. Check it out through the Enhanced Podcast link. This is a collection of menu bar utilities. What sort of things does this offer, Craig?
Well, it's basically a bunch of feedback utilities, so it enables you to track things like your CPU load, how your hard drives are doing, memory information, network activity, and a whole bunch of other stuff, all via tiny little icons in your menu bar. And extended information is also available via each icon's drop-down menu.
Now, although this app's mostly about hardware feedback, you really like its date and time module too.
Yeah, I found this really, really great. I've always hated the limitation that macOS 10's imposed on you. You either get the date or you get the time. It should enable you to do a whole lot more. This app enables you to put the date and time in the menu bar. You also get this little calendar of the current month as well that you can get in a drop-down menu. And one other thing that actually puts it above even things like Magical, and you know, I absolutely love Magical. I've talked about that in the past, but this beats it because it's got world clock functionality built in. Mm-hmm. So you can add a list of world clocks which are then available by the drop-down menu.
Now, you gave this application 5 out of 5 and a choice award.
Yeah, the thing is, I was really astonished with how good this application is. It's not the only one of its class. There are a whole bunch of other applications like this, but it's way better than all of them. And it also happens to be free, too. And the thing is, that world clock thing, it just kind of beats all of the commercial equivalents. So even if you only use that module, it's still worth installing. However, I think all of it works well. You know, they all look good, too. It's really, really worth checking out.
Okay, iStamp Menus version 1.3 from iSlayer. It's free. Check it out. We've got some extras for you. You've actually given us 2 more Choice Awards this month, Craig. Both also 2 free utilities, so you can briefly talk about each one of them. The first is iTunes Menu, available from macupdate.com, and you can get to it through our enhanced podcast link that we tell you about. Craig, tell us about this product.
Well, this is something I've been looking for absolutely ages. It sticks the current iTunes track into the menu bar, so you don't have to bring iTunes to the front to see what's playing or waste screen space with some sort of floating information display.
Very neat.
Yeah, it's great. And it also offers system-wide iTunes shortcuts and ground notification. It's free. It works. What more do you want?
Exactly. And the other product is Mail Appetizer version 1.3b1 from bronsonbeta.com. Tell us about it.
Well, to be perfectly frank, Apple should buy this guy out right now. this is an app that I've loved since I've first used it. It's absolutely fantastic. All it does basically is add a notification window to mail, but it's really, really handy. You know, you've got mail in the background, an email comes in, usually you get a badge in the dock.
Right.
Well, you know, whoopee, that doesn't tell you anything.
Exactly.
Install this app, an email comes in, a little semi-transparent window appears wherever you want it on the screen at the size that you want it on the screen, shows a preview of each message, and the window's also got controls, so you can delete the message via this little window, mark it as read, open it in mail. It's also highly configurable as well, so you can determine what's shown in the notification window, so, you know, different fields from the email, all that sort of thing. And you can even restrict it to specific accounts.
Yeah, it really sounds like it's a preference that should be in Apple Mail now, Craig. You're exactly right. Apple should buy this guy out.
Well, it's definitely one of my favorites of all of the things I've reviewed in Mac format for the shareware page. It's right up there with stuff like default folder, but hey, you know, it's free as well. It's brilliant, it works. Download it now if you're a Mail user.
Okay, so that's Sketchbook, that's iStat Menus, and 2 great extras for the month of August. Craig, thanks so much for joining us. We'll see you next month.
All right, see you next month.
Craig Grinnell reviews shareware for Mac Format Magazine. His August picks begin on page 100 in Mac Format. If there's a guy I know who can answer your questions, it's Trevor Middleton with Questions and Answers. Hello, Trevor.
Hi there, Brett. How are you today?
Very good. Thanks for joining us again to answer some questions from some of our listeners, our great listeners out there all over the world. Before we begin, let me tell you that you can send us your questions wherever you are to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from, very important, and how to pronounce your name. Question 1 comes from Alec Brown in Bedford-on-Avon in Warwickshire. He writes us, since buying an iMac last November, I've scanned loads of photos and negatives using an Epson Perfection V200 scanner. However, about 6 of the black and white negatives, something strange is happening. When I corrected them in Photoshop Elements 6 and reopened them in iPhoto, they became translucent. It hasn't happened since then, and it only happened on those 6 black and white negatives. Trevor, any idea what's going on here?
Right, well, this is a curious question. I actually went out and I borrowed some black and white negatives from my dad's next door neighbour, and I scanned them myself using a Canon scanner, though I couldn't replicate this problem, as Alec hasn't been able to. Now, I was testing this out after the release of the Leopard graphics update in February of this year. Possibly that's why the Leopard graphics update was issued. Of course, Photoshop Elements 6 for Mac came out in January, though Apple wasn't exactly forthcoming about what that update was actually for. In general, though, there is this constant interdependence between Apple and developers, which is why it's worthwhile signing up for a couple of online Mac forums such as MacFixit, so that if you have a problem, such as Alec had, you can see if anyone else is having that same problem and what they've done to correct it or rectify it. Also, if you keep an eye on Apple's support pages for workarounds and updates for questions like this, it will save you a lot of frustration, time, and effort. In the meantime, I'm going back to trying to scan these black and white negatives and see if I can replicate this problem. Brad.
Trevor, let me ask you something about this question. Do you have any idea where the problem is actually happening? Is it in iPhoto or is it Photoshop Elements, or we just don't really know?
I suspect it's something to do with the Quartz graphics layer in Mac OS X. He'd corrected the image using Photoshop Elements. He'd then reopened it in iPhoto, and beneath the image you could see the events in iPhoto.
Uh-huh.
So he'd imported it using the scanner software. He'd corrected it using Photoshop Elements. He'd reopened it in iPhoto. So it's difficult to tell what was the cause of that, if anything, though it seemed to happen after he corrected them in Photoshop Elements. I suspect, as I say, that it was something to do with the Quartz graphics layer, which has been corrected by the Leopard graphics update, though Apple typically weren't forthcoming as to what that update corrected.
Right. Question two from Katie Hardwick in Cardiff, Wales. She writes us, I need to be able to convert audio files quickly and reliably to a number of other formats, particularly Apple lossless. I've tried to do it in iTunes, but I find it really cumbersome. Is there a simple answer? Trevor.
There is a very simple answer. The first place I look for anything like this is DougScripts.com. That's DougScripts.com. Doug Adams is an independent developer, and he has a script that'll do most jobs you want to achieve in iTunes quickly and simply. I've sent you a link to it. I hope you find it useful. If anyone else wants that link, please do get in touch with us on the usual email address. Brad.
And question three is from Martin Coates in London, who wrote, I have two Macs and I want to sync the music, playlists, and tracks played information across both machines. I have looked at TuneRanger, SuperSync, and Syncopation, but I can't tell which is best for my needs. Trevor, what's best to use here?
Okay, well, first of all, if you have two desktop Macs in the same location, it's worthwhile getting hold of a large networkable hard disk to use as a music server. It's much more efficient than having an iTunes library on each Mac, and I know several people who do that. Now, if you're moving your Macs around, if, for instance, you have a MacBook or MacBook Pro that you want to take, and you'd rather have your music library on your hard disk than an iPod, there are software solutions available, as Martin says. And I've taken a quick look at the three that he mentions. I would say if you're using exclusively Macs, I'd probably go for Syncopation, as it allows you to set up a block list to stop certain tracks or genres of music being transferred. But it's early days yet, and I will keep on this one, and I'll get in touch with Martin when I've had a more useful experience of all those three packages. Brad.
All right, Trevor, thanks so much for going over three great questions this time around. We'll see you again.
See you next time.
You can send us your questions to machelpme@futurenet.co.uk. And don't forget to tell us where you're from and how to pronounce your name. And that's it for another edition of Mac Format This Week. My thanks to Graham Lee, Graham Barlow, Craig Grinnell, and Trevor Middleton. Our associate producer is Misha Sakleropoulou. You can always send us your comments and suggestions to macformatthisweek@futurenet.co.uk. Join us for our next edition on Monday, the 18th of August. Until then, I'm Brad Gibson. Thanks for joining us.